In Western culture, we're really programmed, go to the gym and use heavy stuff. There's nothing wrong with that, but we miss the boat completely on how to actually turn our bodies into these beautiful fluid machines that can do cool stuff and not just get plowed by injuries along the way.
How do we truly feel like a success in every area of our lives? How do we feel enough and know that we are not alone? Join me as I interview some of the top leaders and experts in the world, from Broadway directors to multimillionaire CEOs, neuroscientists, and more, to look behind the curtain of success and examine not only the achievements, but also the fears, the doubts, the loneliness, and how we can navigate through that to create the incredible life we actually want to live. Welcome to Success Engineering. So welcome back to Success Engineering. So the reason we didn't have an episode go live last week was because it was actually Chinese New Year, and my family was enjoying a wonderful time at Disney in Shanghai to celebrate my son's birthday with another family. We had an awesome time, you know, watching the amazing fireworks that they have. They put on every night, and feeling like a pirate in Pirates of the Caribbean to, you know, riding on the light cycle from Tron. It was really, really fun. So had a blast, but that's why we didn't have the episode go out last week. So for this next episode, I want to provide a very practical framework for you that you can use to develop your own workout and strength training plan at home. So obviously, you know, you need to talk about this with your doctor and make sure this is right for you. These are general recommendations, but I wanted to have Ashley Gass on. She's an amazing expert in terms of fitness, and we're going to talk through everything from the top five mobility exercises that everyone should be doing, pretty much, to the top five supplements that you'd want to potentially do your research around to see if they could benefit you, to the exact framework for how you can structure a comprehensive workout plan to maximize the benefit from that in the shortest amount of time. So it's an episode you're going to want to take some notes from and potentially even listen to multiple times, because Ashley provides tons of tips and we really dive into it to give you the best framework here for you to help you with your workouts. So I hope you enjoy. So welcome back to Success Engineering. I have the privilege of having Ashley Gass on. She has a massive professional track record in strength and conditioning. Her credentials and experience are just really, really extensive. So master's degree in human clinical nutrition through the University of Bridgeport. She's a certified sports nutritionist. She's one of the few strength and conditioning specialists in Florida, and also holds a certified nutrition specialist credential, coaching for 20 years, learning for 20 years, co-owner now of Move Gymnastics Inspired Strength Training in Clearwater, Florida. So this is going to be a great conversation. We're going to get a lot of practical insight from it. Welcome to the show here, Ashley.
Thank you so much, Michael. Thank you.
Absolutely. Great to have you. So let's start talking about your background. I mean, you were always very active. You loved, you know, athletics and things and gymnastics for 9 years, but I want to talk about kind of working up to the injury that you had and then how you went about using that to learn and develop and grow from that point.
Yeah, cool. So grew up as an athlete. I think a lot of us did, which is why we gravitated towards the field of kinesiology and exercise phys. We kind of figured, all right, physics is not going to be it for me. So
right, let's stick an exercise in the front and then maybe I can handle that.
Trains going in different directions and the timing, just I couldn't figure it out. So it was, I knew I wasn't going to be a physicist. Anyway, so it was interesting because as a, you know, by the time I was 21 years old, I, again, was a pretty established athlete. And at that time, getting a collegiate soccer at the University of Victoria in Canada. But I had chronic back pain and no one could really figure out what's going on. And my MRIs at that time were not great. There was advanced degenerative changes in the L3, 4, 5, L5, S1 segments. And the only thing that was found that was a bit of a genetic anomaly was sacralization of L5, S1 on the right. So, you know, as we're all told, I think, especially 25 years ago, just don't do it. Stop lifting. Stop this. Don't, if it hurts, don't do it. It's like, well, wait a minute. If, you know, if I was in too much pain to go for a run, I would just, you know, lie on the floor and put my shoes on and go for a run rather than bending over and putting my shoes on to go for a run. So pain really didn't stop. It wasn't a game changer.
Like, fine, so, I'll just roll down the hill. That'll be my exercise.
Yeah, like, Yeah,
Can't stop me.
we'll just go slow enough for a while until things warm up, and then, it'll be fine. So, it was really just basically 15 years of that. And of course, as you would expect, there were just micro trauma to primarily the L405, L5S1 disc. And that resulted in over the years, just here and there, of course, my nervous system would seize up and I'd be for 3 or 4 days at a time. I just would roll on a lacrosse ball for a long time and eventually be fine again over the course of a couple of days, and then just get back to training and everything else. And then fast forward a bunch of years, one day that wasn't enough, and I had a bit of a drop foot, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of weird, my foot's not working.
That's
that
when it
well.
Gets serious.
but still in my this is in my late 20s, early 30s when I first got to the States. And I kind of just overlooked it again, because without fail, within a few days and a bunch of rolling around and maybe some manual therapy, things would just get better again. So I just rolled with the punches, more or less. And then came the day where the thing really blew. It ended up being a 7 millimeter herniation out. But what happened is the disc fragmented and dropped around the S1 nerve root on the left, which feeds the whole dermatome, lateral glute, hamstring, calf, Achilles tendon, Achilles reflex. So I lost that whole line, and it was like drop a leg. It took a good day for that to onset. But by the end of day one, when my foot was completely numb and I was walking like I had a broken ankle, I'm like,
ooh,
this is different. I still had the mindset that I was going to wake up one day and things were going to be fine. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, I didn't stop training. I kept doing push pull. I had to watch myself doing lunges because I couldn't feel my foot. So I had to watch my foot so that I didn't fall. But whatever, I'm like, I can still push and pull. So you kind of get the story. And then I end up having neurosurgery because it was apparent that if the nerve root dies, if the S1 nerve root had experienced atrophy or varying degrees of atrophy to the point of, well, the nerve root isn't functional anymore, then it's a permanent disability, right? So I'm like, am I ever going to be able to run again? Please. So that's the short story of that. And, it's kind of interesting because I think all of us that have been through these sorts of injuries, and, Dave Goggins' classic is that the mindset that gets us to the point where we're that badly injured is the mindset that also gets us through it. Most people would have wanted to have seen me stop, or just, okay, you've had back surgery, now just take it easy and become someone who walks a lot every day. And I'm like, no, like I had surgery on a Friday morning, and I was out forcing myself to skip, pull, push, same thing. Like I didn't stop. I did not stop. I didn't listen to a damn thing when it came to guidelines. And the surgeon was like, yeah, you're cool, you know what you're doing, just don't do anything stupid. And I didn't do stupid things. So I think it's that it's the mindset that gets us into this place that also gets us out of that place, rather than just going, okay, I had a good run, now I'm going to just walk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Talk to me about how you started to discover, a different style of training through, Christopher Summers, and you can explain who he is in gymnastics style. And talk to me how that kind of changed your approach to what you're talking about. I mean, you're very knowledgeable up at that point. You're doing all these things, but there are some underlying things that you could also fix along the way to maybe make it a little bit easier for yourself.
No doubt. Well, yes, thank God for Christopher Summer and Rob Wolf, actually. So Christopher Summer is the founder of Gymnastic Bodies. At that time, Gymnastic Bodies. Now the brand has changed a bit, I think, to Gym Fit, but at that time it was Gymnastic Bodies. And he, at that time, had been head coach of the men's national gymnastics team for 40 years. And he had developed a reputation for bringing up his athletes from youth through Olympians without injuring them. And the mechanism of how he did that is he really made sure that the training process was one of patience and a long-term plan. And he was uncompromising when it came to the integration of mobility and flexibility work with strength training. He never rushed the process, and he never compromised on those progressions and the integration of both. So in that podcast, he spoke about one of his athletes who, when Alan went away to college and was kind of out from under the wing and the tutelage of Summer, he started to develop back injuries because, of course, those training protocols were compromised. And he had to bring Alan kind of back to the basics of good progressions, patience and training and integration of strength and mobility. And when he started to talk about back injuries, my ears perked up because that was about 2.5, 3 months after back surgery. And I was like, okay, all right. Cause I knew surgery doesn't like cure the original problem. It just, it can get you out of hot water. And for me in particular, it got me out of hot water, but I was starting to get kind of nice and stiff in those lower lumbar segments again. And, you know, I knew that the path was going to lead back to where it was. And I'm like, all right, clearly I missed something. I've had all this, you know, education both in and outside of school. I've learned from countless colleagues and professionals, all of whom are very good at what they do. I've missed something and I don't even know what I've missed. So I bought all the foundation's work at that time, which was, you know, available as big chunks of course. And I got busy studying and applying all of it to my training.
talk to the audience about how it's different. You know, so you talked about the mobility and things like that, but for people that aren't as necessarily as familiar with that, how does it look differently than typical strength training?
Well, in typical strength training, we're used to moving external load. We're used to dumbbells and barbells and kettlebells, and that's all fantastic. But in this training system, there's nothing other than your body. And as you get more advanced, of course, there's rings and stuff to pull from to train eventual rope climb work from. There's some pommel horses for back extension work, but the majority of everything was of course body weight based. And that was what stood out the most is I think that we're in Western culture, we're really programmed, go to the gym and use heavy stuff. Like I said, there's nothing wrong with that, but we miss the boat completely on how to actually turn our bodies into these beautiful fluid machines that can do cool stuff and not just get plowed by injuries along the way. So that was what stood out initially, of course, was the fact that these incredibly fit gymnasts weren't dependent on heavy loading 5, 6, 7 days a week for their training. Mm-hmm. And the stuff that even foundation level one work, like sitting on the floor and lifting your legs up, L-sit work, just crush. Yeah. The first level one I went to was in Texas, and you know, Summer had 50 of us in there, and he just would stand and look at us in warm up and just go, what's wrong with you guys?
You guys are fitness professionals.
Are you serious? Like most of us couldn't even lift our straight legs off the floor 3 inches.
Yeah. And for the audience that doesn't know what an L-sit is, basically you're sitting on the ground back straight. You put your arms beside your butt and you try to lift your butt and your legs off of the ground. You know, yeah. It's like the gymnasts do with all their crazy stuff on the rings, but doing it on the ground, just starting off, is incredibly difficult.
Yeah. Just lift your heels off the ground and everyone's like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah. God. No, it's interesting. We were talking a little bit before we started the call, and I don't know if I've shared this on the podcast. So, you know, I was a personal trainer, nutrition coach back in the day. A lot of people know that, but I went through a similar thing. Like there was one day I'm just like lifting, I'm trying to gain a bunch of mass because, you know, that's what you're supposed to do. And I realized like, I just hated exercise. And I was like, when did I start hating to exercise? And for me, I'd played sports growing up and I really loved that. And I was like, oh, it's when I stopped playing sports and I have no real reason besides an aesthetic reason to be lifting this heavy thing. And I changed everything. That was the period I actually discovered, you know, gymnastic bodies as well with Christopher Summer. Changed all my workouts to, you know, bodyweight stuff. I started cycling into, you know, work. I started getting into rock climbing and I loved it again. Like all these things that I just love again. And there's so much carryover between gymnastic bodies, the ability of your body to be able, like you talked about, to be fluid, to be flexible, to be strong and powerful, which is what gymnasts are. But like you said, you're not lifting not all the time, right? But most of the time you're not lifting an external source. And so people think of calisthenics as pushups and squats, but you have like handstand pushups, you have like planche, which is like, you're literally like, you know, not your feet are not on the ground in a pushup position. Like it's insanely difficult what you can progress up to.
When were you in the GB scene? Like, when did you discover that?
What year was that? That's probably like 2016 or so.
Yep. Yeah. It was about I think you and I, so I had back surgery I was probably a year ahead. Yeah. Right around the same time.
Interesting. Yeah, it changed everything for me, and I've adapted, done different things and stuff since then. But it's a very interesting system. But for people, you know, obviously even for us, you know, we might not be doing the, you know, planche and the handstand pushups and stuff like that. Let's talk about for beginners, right? Like, let's say, you know, if we're entrepreneurs, let's say people are just working a bunch, they want to start their exercise routine. What are either some basic assessments that they could potentially do on their own or important things to consider? And then where do they go to kind of start creating a program for themselves?
That's a really good question. So are we, let's just sort of play two sides here. Are we assuming there's a facility and a coach involved, or are we assuming that they're
assume there's not. Because if there's a coach, like, they can, you know, bounce ideas and stuff off of them. Let's say, like, they're wanting to do an exercise thing. They're not really familiar with it. They don't really know necessarily where to start, but they know it's important. What would you recommend for people like that? Maybe it's online. You know, what does that look like?
My advice would be to always address the basics of mobility first. Hmm. My top colleagues that come to mind is, for example, like Ben Patrick, really good friend of mine, knees over toes guys. He's got a great system that is just more or less plug and play, not dependent on a gym, but basic equipment, kind of like basic equipment needed in the later phases and the early phases, very body weight. We've got good custom online coaching where folks have a chance to do assessments to kind of figure out, whoa, okay, I need some work. Like, no wonder my shoulders are hurting all the time. My bridge is terrible. But it really, at that point, the consumer has to develop a bit of an ability to go, all right, what are my weakest links? And then to be able to plug themselves into the training system, whether that's an app or just YouTube videos, to start to chip away at their own strengths and weaknesses, if you will, as opposed to just going, okay, I'm going to, it's this 100 pushups a day and 100 squats a day, every day. Yes. Like, okay. Yeah. Got it. But, you know, maybe we should have some pulling work in there, some scapular work. Mm. So it's a really good question, but it just sort of leads me to go, all right, if I was the consumer that was for the first time opening up Pandora's box of how do I train at home, there'd have to be a part of me that would understand what my limitations were and then be smart enough to look at the training material I was being presented with and go, that makes sense, or that doesn't make sense. And then putting it all together so that perhaps I were addressing my weakest links first and then getting into good quality, whole body-ish strength training, which is, that's no small task.
Well, and this is like, you know, this is exactly why coaches are so important, right? We think, you know, in general, we just kind of think like, oh, I'm going to go out there. Maybe I'm going to start to run. And, you know, you could do that, but there might be imbalances and stuff that you have that then start to get exacerbated down the road without that. Or I go into a gym and I start doing, maybe it's a limited amount, maybe it's a medium amount of what I know, but you might have limited range of motion and you're building strength on a faulty foundation or a foundation that isn't as good as it potentially could be to support where you want to go. So if you were like, let's just talk about mobility, you know, for potentially people that are, you know, beginner at this, that might not even know about foam rolling or what that looks like, or, you know, very basic mobility kind of things. What would you say if you were to just kind of, and I know this is very, very difficult to do because it's very individual, but you have things like upper cross syndrome and, you know, anterior pelvic tilt and stuff like that. So what would you say, like, for fundamental mobility, 3 to 5 things that people, problem areas that typically come up for people, especially if they're sitting, you know, a lot of their time at desks?
That's such a good question. And I think actually, let's make sure you get access to this, is I'll send you the mobility poster that I had designed. I called it Move 10, 10 stretches in roughly 10 minutes a day.
Perfect.
Because I went after those things. And one of the main ones, of course, is a lot of folks between commuting and working spend a lot of the day sitting, like legitimately probably over the course of a day, let's just say 6 total hours of sitting. So okay, fine. When you're sitting, the hip flexors are in a short position. So we've got to make sure those guys get opened up. So the back foot on wall couch stretch, or a good quality split squat with the back leg extended, so you've got good hip extension. That would be number one. So keep the anterior hips strong and flexible so that you don't develop too much of an anterior pelvic tilt. The second one I would recommend, of course, would be shoulders, because life happens in front and work is in front. So we just by default kind of end up with humeral head, a little bit of sometimes a lot of an internally rotated humerus, which of course then brings the scapula into that stuck protracted position, and the neck has to follow. The neck can't stay up with a nice S curve. It's got to go boop. So the whole upper body posture just ends up back here. So that then goes, all right, how do we reverse that? Some sort of a chest stretch or something in external rotation where we're getting out of this and into this so that we can open up pec minor and the whole system and the neck comes back. And, you know, we can probably eliminate the one day need for a labral repair. So that would be number two. So hip flexor, take care of the chest and the shoulders. Number three would be the calves and Achilles. So a good quality calf stretch with the front foot elevated on a surface so that you get a little bit of that torque on the posterior chain. So in other words, there's a protocol that Emmett Lewis built quite a while ago. It's the elbow to toe protocol to increase hamstring flexibility and strength. So just, hey, like standing up, bending over, touching the floor, touching your toes, touching your knees, just work on it, just extending the posterior chain. Oh, that's bad. You're not really extending it. You're stretching it, but getting like a head to Achilles tendon stretch of the posterior chain. So it'd be three. From there, anything to hang from or just go overhead with to stretch out the lats and the obliques and the QL. And then I would say to address the wrists. So there's nice hands and knee wrist stretching where you just get on the ground, or you can even stand against the wall and do, or you don't even need a wall. I can just right here, just stretching your wrists out. Just keep these guys active and open and strong. So those would be my five, just hip flexor and rectus femoris, shoulders, external rotation and extension, some sort of hanging work. And if there's something to hang from, you can use a counter and even do like a lateral horizontal to a stretch posterior chain.
Super great. So for the people that you can't see what she's doing, you best please send over the information and I can put it in put it in the show notes of the podcast for those of you who can't see what's going on. But yes, this stuff can be kind of, you know, complicated. Just to sum up a little bit of what she said. So hip flexors, essentially the muscles in your front of your hip that raise your leg up. And when you know, if you just look at a sitting posture, those are shortened because you have to be in that 90 degree position. So you're trying to stretch that out. Posterior chain is basically everything behind your body. So your hamstrings, your glutes, your back, lats, things like that. And so you're trying to stretch that out. Then you talked about the calf, stretching that out as well, and the chest. But having pictures for this will be super, super helpful.
Yeah.
Because like we said, it's difficult to know, right? It's difficult to know some of these things, and they're important to get this stuff back before you start adding, you know, the strength onto it. So let's say people are doing this. What percentage of, you have a 10-minute thing, you know, and it, again, it depends on how much time they have available, but 10 minutes is a good period of time. A lot of people can hopefully find that to squeeze that in there. What would you start to recommend as far as very basic exercise recommendations that they can start to build from that? What are the main things that they should be aware of or making sure that they focus on?
Again, sort of being that person that can identify their biggest weak links first and address those. So in other words, if you're going into a training program or you're trying to build one for yourself and you're in chronic pain, let's address that first. And it probably will have a fair bit to do with addressing stuff that's tight and weak. So good mobility training initially, clean up nutrition, because a lot of folks are in really sort of intense inflammatory patterns of poor nutrition, nutrient poor food, poor sleep patterns. So fix that stuff first before you're like, I'm gonna go to the gym and start to, you know,
CrossFit my ass off.
CrossFit 4 days a week and everything's gonna be fast and hard and oh man, no, yeah. And then so just from there, just layer things on. So clean up chronic pain stuff first. If necessary, see a good physical therapist or manual therapist to get some help with that. Clean up nutrition, sleep. Make sure the foundational aspects of lifestyle are just improved a bit before you ramp up the intensity of training. Mm-hmm. And then from there, just layer stuff on. So you might go, all right, I'm going to go to my local gym or kind of ramp up my protocols at home and start to do lower body training. Okay, what might that look like? That might look like some RDLs or stiff leg deadlifts and some split squats and maybe some calf raises. I'm going to get myself a pair of rings and start to do push pulls and just kind of go, all right. You know, we teach people based on your week and your in the flow of how your schedule goes. Most people can start anything that's related to strength and endurance work 2 to 3 days a week and just go, okay, whole body work Tuesdays and Thursdays, or maybe I'll do a whole body split 3 days a week, or potentially I'll split it into a 4 week period where Mondays and Fridays are upper body and core and Wednesdays are lower body and core and some stretching, and then flip it around the next week. So there's many ways to skin the cat, but foundational principles is see if you can iron out your own weak points first before you layer on stuff that's harder.
Yeah. And that's really important and cannot be overstated. And, you know, another guest, Kelly Starrett, he has an app called the Ready State. Phenomenal for mobility. You can just put in, I have pain in this point, and you get exactly what you need to do. Or you're like, I play this sport, or I go, you know, running. This is mobility. This is what you should do beforehand. This is potentially, if you have, you know, time, hopefully this is what you do afterwards. Phenomenal. So people looking at mobility, that's super, super important on that.
Yeah, I wrote that down, the app down. I've heard of it, but I've never looked at it. So.
Oh man, it's amazing. I just love it. You know, I have a decent amount of understanding of as this stuff, not as much as some, but a decent amount, you know, like foam rolling, different things like that. And I do it with him, and you know, in 10 minutes, you're like, one, it's really painful sometimes because you're working out these deep, like, you know, tension things. But then afterwards you're like, oh, I feel amazing. You know, you can move in ways that you're just like, I didn't know this was possible in very short periods of time. Sometimes painful periods of time, but it's like getting a deep tissue massage.
Yes, yes. Cool. We're both from back long enough that we've read The Supple Leopard. And so now he's turned it all into an app. Love it. Love it.
Yeah, it's amazing. So I would highly recommend that. As far as basic, you know, movements, again, if we're coming back to really basic stuff, you know, things like a squat pattern or hinge pattern, could you describe kind of some of those things, or even a push pull? So describe for people what that actually is, if we're at a very, you know, beginner level and want to understand how to kind of create a program that hits the main areas.
Yep, for sure. So let's talk in terms of upper body, and let's split things into vertical and horizontal. Classic way of doing program design. So your vertical push would be overhead work. Okay. Your vertical pull would be your pull up and your chin up work. All grip variations. So pull-ups being overhand grip, chin-ups being underhand grip. And I think that's important to differentiate, because we've got folks calling, making the word chin-up be global. Okay. Paul Quinn was very clear, and this has been in the world of strength and conditioning forever. This is a pull-up. This is a chin-up. Mm-hmm. Very different drills. Okay. So if we're going to think in terms of vertical push-pull, you could have a day where you're starting off and you go, all right, my shoulder health is good. I've got something to pull from. I'm going to start with
a very important thing first, you know, because a lot of times people don't necessarily have the shoulder health to do work. So address the immobility first, but keep going.
Right. Yeah, address it first. And if you have a history, if you've had rotator cuff repairs, or you have a history of impingement, or you're just, your shoulders kind of hurt all the time, your first move, generally speaking, might not be going into overhead. Now, it could be single arm overhead work, which is more forgiving than barbell work right away. But just, you know, to keep things simple, you could have a day where it's vertical press, vertical pull. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to be respectful of where you and I have come from, we would integrate mobility and stretching into that. So we would then integrate some hanging work into the vertical pulling. Okay. So hanging work. And then with shoulder mobility, we would potentially integrate something like a dislocate, a tubing dislocate, to start to work that full 360 range. You could integrate a little bit of rotator cuff work. So some basic side lying external rotation drills for the backside of the rotator cuff. So you sort of think in terms of primary. So again, on that day, you think primary push pull and what mobility can be integrated into that.
Yeah. And what you talked about with that shoulder dislocate, just for people, because this is a super one, like it's one of those exercises that if you just wanted to do potentially one for your shoulders, this might be it. And you can, you know, maybe add or, you know, contradict that, but for people that don't understand what that is, you could get a band or, you know, a bar, but maybe starting with a band. And you basically, you're holding your arms above, you know, above your head, trying to elevate your shoulders up towards your ears, and then moving your hands back behind your body in like a circle. And this is the range of motion that we lose because we don't do anything here. And then from that position, that down position, you're trying to move your arms back up and over in front of yourself. So you're just making this big circle up by your ears, all the way down and back and over. And it's just such a good exercise to restore the range of motion. And a lot of people can't even start with that. So you want to start really, really wide on whatever you're holding. And again, a band gives you more flexibility, and just start, and that gets that chest stretch like you're talking as well. But sorry, keep going with what you're talking about.
Oh, you're absolutely right. That drill initially, it's two things for most people. Number one, it's really difficult. And number two, it's a total game changer.
Yeah. And I do it just like at my desk. Like, so these are things that you can kind of incorporate, you know, if you're at your desk and you don't mind looking silly, or maybe you're in some place that's a little bit, you know, set apart from other people. These are things that just taking every 30 minutes or an hour or once during your day, whatever you could start with, do a little bit of that at your desk. And it's so good for your shoulders.
Yeah, that's a good point. Just to have some tubing close by. Tubing is more forgiving than PVC pipe, because obviously you've got the ability to pull it apart.
Yeah, when you get into those stuck spots.
Yeah, once you're on a PVC pipe, you're not going anywhere.
Unless
you're fighting the grip. So yeah, no, you're totally right on that. So yeah, just look for those kind of hole-in-one drills that you can integrate into your strength training, because you know, one of the reasons that Summer's athletes were so successful, and that, you know, there was so much traction with the foundation strength training work of the original days of gymnastic strength training, was that if you followed the system properly, it was really difficult to get stronger than you were mobile. You had to integrate them together so that as strength ramped up, so did your mobility, and, you know, thus the kind of epic changes in pain and joint injuries from folks that were really training the system. So yeah. So anyway, we're going to get off on a lot of tangents, but
a coach, hire Ashley. We'll put the link in the show notes, but we'll continue to give you tidbits if you want to try on your own.
Invest in some coaching, because this stuff is, I mean, it's sort of, I guess it's like anything else. If you really want to control, not just the wrong word, if you really want to run your own finances 100%, that's cool, but you better be prepared to understand, what are the advantages and disadvantages of the market? What about the Roth? What about this? What are mutual funds? Like, you can, or spend some time and get oriented to the basics from folks that are successful themselves, and then the strategy will make a bit more sense. But I would always recommend just get some guidance if you're truly starting from that point of, what do I do?
Just pay somebody who knows a lot more than you do and have studied it for a long time.
Right. So yeah, and you know, with training splits, that's the basic way for upper body, of course. Then we've got to cover the opposite directions, which is a horizontal. So horizontal pulling would be, you're pulling in this direction. Mm-hmm. And that can be done effectively on rings. It's a little bit harder to do this with no equipment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Generally speaking, unless you want to do renegade rows, you know, for a push up and row from, you know, so, and then horizontal pressing, of course, is more of your chest focused work, which can
chest
be
presses, push-ups, things like that.
Yeah. And that stuff can be so beneficial on moves in my Instagram feed. I've covered information on this, because you can and really should turn your horizontal pushing into a combination of pushing, but also integrating the scapula into those drills. So you're not just mindlessly doing push-ups, but you're actually integrating scapular retraction and depression into your push-up as you go down, so that you're not just kind of riding out the front of the joint and making what's typically tighter. But that's, you know, I did a post on that a little while ago, and you can check that out on the feed.
And for people that don't know, scapula is your shoulder blades, basically.
Yeah, your shoulder blades. So when we say scapular retraction, we mean like scapular pulling back.
It's basically like pinching. If you picture like pinching a quarter in between your shoulder blades, that's kind of thing.
Yeah, and you can see the difference. So when I'm doing a push-up, if I'm not paying attention to my scapula, I can do push-ups like this all day long. But once I integrate retraction or pulling in, my push-up can start to look a lot like that. And in the top, I can protract. So I can stick my shoulder blades out on the way down. I can lower myself, but pay attention to scapular retraction. So if you're doing the right things with the right cues, you can really change a lot about the shoulder position, the arm bone position in the shoulder socket, and you can really change a lot about your posture without feeling like you have to walk around all day, like trying to force your posture. Because forcing posture, as we all know, is you can't do it long term. You have to train your body to get to the point where it just rests in the way that it should rest, which takes training and tension reduction in the right places.
Along those lines, before we kind of get to the lower body, we'll see how much we cover here, because like we can go, like you said, down a lot of rabbit holes and things like that, but important ones. But I wanted to talk about breathing and how that can actually, you know, your advice on that, and how you can use that to essentially help with posture and resetting some of that.
So I'll admit in full, this isn't a rabbit hole that I've gone really deeply down. So in training and breathing in general, a lot of us are in lockdown mode all day. So we don't take those deep diaphragmatic breaths where the diaphragm expands and that we get the belly involved. It's all very almost low level hyperventilating. So in general, in training, what you want to make sure you're focusing on is on the challenging parts of the lift. So if I'm going down into a squat or a deadlift or a max pull, that when I'm here and I'm hanging up and I'm about to start, it's like, and then redeveloping breath on the way down in the movement. So, but from a general standpoint, we've just day to day, most of us have to work a lot more on diaphragmatic, deep, proper breaths, and not just hyperventilating on a low level all day. And then during training, to make sure that on those sticky points of max lifts or of max endurance lifts, that we're exhaling like hard on the force output part of the lift.
Very important. And we tend to kind of look at these things in different categories, but like you're talking about it all ties together. You know, you have to have your sleep, you have to have your nutrition, you have to have your hydration, you have to have, you know, the exercise. Like, it all is a whole thing. And we've had other guests on that have talked about the sleep and things like that. So this one, we're definitely focusing on the exercise. But when we shift down to lower body, what are some of the main movement patterns that people should be thinking about, making sure that they address?
Key ones, squat and hinge, and then single leg work. So squat is very classically trunk in a more vertical position where the hips are dropping down and into the lift. So in a squat, the trunk is in a more vertical pattern and the hips drop down and into the lift. That's a squat pattern. A hinge pattern is when the trunk stays very upright and the hips hinge behind. So it's like one of the cues I used in the RDL or the stiff leg deadlift is chest up, ass out. That's a hinge pattern when the hips drive back, but the trunk stays very not upright positionally, because in the stiff leg deadlift, of course, you're leaning into the lift, but the trunk isn't rounding. It's a hinge. So you think of that as, you break it down into squat pattern, hinge pattern, and then bilateral versus a single leg or unilateral lift. So the squat and the deadlift would be bilateral lifts, and then things like pistol squats, split squats would be your single leg lifts. And then of course you'd have your more accessory work like single leg RDLs or single leg stiff leg deadlifts. And so that would just be an example. So what that might look like in a training protocol would be say 3 to 4 sets of a hinge. So 3 to 4 sets of a stiff leg deadlift or a good morning, where the bar or the tubing or a PVC pipe is behind the neck and the hip hinge is occurring there versus the dumbbells being down and in front. Hip hinge. Okay. So it might be several sets of hip hinge drill followed by several sets of a body weight squat or a goblet squat with the weight held in front, or if you're working with a bar, back squat or front squat. And then I would definitely finish with some accessory work. So split squat, Cossack squat is like a split squat, but laterally.
Side to side, yeah.
Side to side, yep, side to side squat. And from there, calf work, Achilles work, just to keep the Achilles tendon and the calves strong and flexible. Again, in the GB days, we did fairly high volume calf work in the front split series. And that can be done also, or if you've got access to seated calf raise machines and standing calf raise machines, working drills there. So for lower body, you generally would structure squat pattern, hinge pattern. I think a split squat pattern is super important to cover the single leg work.
Super great. Yeah. What about core recommendations on that?
Yep.
And potentially, what are people typically doing wrong?
Yeah.
When they're trying to train their core, if we have enough time, right?
I know. That's a funny one. And it's kind of interesting. So again, if you look at life patterns, we tend to end up sitting a lot. And then core work, what do most people do? They end up doing a lot of like
crunches and stuff. So they're emphasizing the bent so over pattern.
You can emphasize the bent over pattern. Whereas I think what people need to pay attention to is thinking of their core as like around their body. So it's not only the front muscles, but it's the sides, like the obliques and the QL. It's the erectors and the small spinal muscles like multifidus. So integrate extension patterns into your core work. So if you're going to do variations of sit-ups or like hollow body holds with your arms by your sides or overhead and your legs out in front, very challenging drills. If you're going to do those drills, which are flexion-based, integrate extension with it. So that can mean going into a cobra or like an NPT, a McKenzie press up, or doing a scorpion, which is extension rotation. I know I don't have pictures of all this, but
basically extension. One thing for the audience is if you think about, you know, if you literally just lie down on the ground with your hands above your head and try to lift your arms and your hands, you know, like off the ground, and lift your legs and your toes off the ground with your legs straight. And you'll notice you may not even be able to do that, because all of that is so underdeveloped compared to the tightness and stuff that's in the front. So that's extension work. You're trying to, like you said, treat your core as the back part as well, that we, you know, just ignore a lot of times. And you'll notice, you'll be like, oh, wow, I don't have anything here. So either get a coach or do more of those things that focus on bringing balance to the imbalance there.
Yeah, like arching drills. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And then respect the lateral flexion. So things like standing side bending and side stretching to get the sides to open up. Basic drills like, I guess we'll call them side planks. In GB, in gymnastic, we call them side over arches. But side planks. What else?
Carries.
Pardon?
Talk to us about carries as well. Farmers carries and stuff like that.
Oh, farmers carries, single sided farmers carries, because you're holding a whatever, say it's a 20-pound dumbbell on one side, you're going to be challenged to stay upright as opposed to be dropped down with the weight. So farmers carries are really useful for, well, grip strength, but they're also useful for stabilizing the core with uneven loads, which is life. And people tend to get injured when they expose themselves to lifting and carrying or pushing or pulling something in life that they haven't trained for, and the body's not used to that. So something just grabs and they're like, oh, my back.
Right.
Yeah.
So I mean, literally example of that is like carrying your groceries. Like that's a perfect example in life. Like you are just carrying something that you need to avoid, you know, just not bending over from. That's an example of what you train for to actually give your core the stability it needs to be healthy, ideally.
Yeah. Really good point. Yeah. So there's so many things that you can do just as you're starting training. And there's so much that you have to become really good at picking the top thing, like a few of the top things, and knowing why you're doing that.
And this is like, you know, when I was a trainer too, a lot of times, you know, people, the time is really limited. So it's like, I love what you have with that 10-minute, you know, mobility thing, where it's like in these 10 minutes, these are the big bang for your bucks kind of things. And that's what I'm, you know, we're trying to do in this episode is provide those big bang for your bucks movements. And they're called compound movements. So often, you know, especially if you're, you know, a guy or, you know, for girls, the triceps, but for guys, the, you know, the biceps, you go right in there and you're like, I'm going to do the gym and I'm working this. Well, it's not just one, but sort of, if we're simplifying it, you know, I'm working this one little muscle, but if you're doing a pull up, you're working the massive muscles in your back and the, you know, muscle in your bicep as well. And so doing these compound pushing exercises, compound pulling exercises, like you said, vertically and horizontally, and then the big ones for your legs, like those big squat, you know, patterns, as opposed to sitting on a machine and doing like a, you know, raising my knees, you know, up and down right kind of thing. You're doing right these big squats, big hinge motions, big lateral kind of side to side motions, and then the core ideally that kind of integrates all of it. And then you alternate that potentially with some, you know, cardio or something on a different day, and you have a decent plan, right? Even if you did that one time a week, sure. Yeah. And one time a week of cardio, it's decent, you know? So that's a decent starting point. And I don't know if you have other things that you'd want to add to that.
I mean, is a starting point, keep things as simple as possible and just run with it. And when you're at the point where you go, okay, I think I'm doing pretty well with these basics, what's the next layer? And it's just the ability to do well with a plan and stick with it for long enough to then see it through to the next phase. So,
yeah. So, you know, that's a lot on the exercise kind of thing. Talk to us. And I have had other guests talk about this, but I'm curious kind of the big, you know, if we're talking the big five or so on the nutrition side of things as well, or even hydration, what do you recommend big levers that people can essentially pull if they're just getting started?
Yeah, it's a good question, because a lot of folks that come to the facility and that I start with in the online space, we have to go after the biggest things first. So what I notice in almost 100% of folks that start tracking inside of an app is the obvious stuff. Number one is, and I really go back to some of John Berardi's foundations of good nutrition on this one, some of these 10 key habits, is most folks need to increase their protein intake. So I've got some, you know, males and females that are 150, 160 pounds plus, well, especially guys, some of 200 pounds, and their protein intake is less than 25 grams a day, which is, it's dangerous. So
it's
number
like one
is
chicken breast for people.
Yeah. Or it's a, you know, exactly. And then just pure carbs and kind of to go foods for the rest of the day. So number one is increased protein intake. And a general rule of thumb I have for folks initially is aim for, just regardless of who you are, just aim for 100 grams a day from supplemental and food sources. So that's number one. Number two is usually healthy fats are absent. So increase intake of good fats like olive oil, avocado, so your monounsaturated fats, and then your omega-3s. Omega-3 intake is usually pretty low. So let's get some high performance fats in there. Number three is just increase nutrient density overall. So folks try to eliminate or minimize pure snacky foods like pretzels and chips, because the value from those foods is, of course, pretty much zero. And I find that as folks increase nutrient density from good fruits, veg, nuts, seeds, and, you know, good quality proteins, their desire for those foods goes down. So that would be three, is just to start to eliminate nonsense calories out of your diet if they're a staple. Okay, so there's nothing wrong with every now and then, but if they're a staple, we need to change that. Get water intake up. Chronic dehydration can cause a lot of problems, including chronic pain. In our bodies are water dependent, so let's get water intake up. And I find a safe range for folks that can be, it can definitely be a bit uncomfortable at first, especially if they're used to drinking 3 glasses of water a day, is start to shoot for anywhere from ideally about a gallon a day. It's a lot for folks, but it seems to be an amount that is highly effective once someone dials that in. And then number five, it's difficult to go wrong with increasing just good quality veggies and greens in the diet for nutrient density. So those are the key ones, but the number one, almost across the board, 100% of the time, even people that say initially, I think I eat pretty well, they're missing the protein mark by a long shot. And it's become clear. I've really gotten into restudying Peter Attia's work over the last few months and his interviews on protein synthesis and the importance of it, is you don't want to be chronically underfed on protein.
Yeah, super important. So definitely, you know, potentially have that as a starting point, and you can ladder up with some of the other things that are mentioned. As far as supplements, and again, you know, preface all this with we're not doctors, and you have to do your own research and stuff on this. Yep. And how it interacts with everything. But what would you recommend for people as kind of basic things that could potentially be helpful for them?
Yeah, number one for sure would be magnesium intake. So Chris Kresser just put a video out on this about 4 months ago now. The magnesium guidelines have been increased to in the range of like 500 to 700 milligrams a day for males and females. I've never seen anyone's food intake or food log over a week that would indicate they get magnesium on a daily basis from other than from maybe a little bit of salad. I mean, so, but you know, magnesium, of course, is probably the most important mineral in the body. It's involved in hundreds of enzyme reactions. We're very dependent on it, and it's not in abundance in our food sources anymore. So magnesium is critical. The other one is I'm a real big fan of a good supplemental protein. So whether that's coming from whey, pea, hemp, I'm indifferent as long as folks vary the sources a little bit and get their intake up. So that's another one that I find, because most folks don't want to be eating food all day long for protein. So supplemental source can be really helpful. And again, I'm a big fan of omega-3s and vitamin D. Those are the key four. Now, I love creatine myself personally, and with all the research that continues to, I don't, you know, we shouldn't even be debating about creatine anymore. It's
right. It's like the most, I think it's the most researched supplement out there.
The most researched and extremely safe, extremely effective, not only for, you know, as we all know, for lean mass and performance gain, but for longevity, cognitive health. And there appears to be a lot of connections between just neurological function too. So creatine's a big one. Those would be my five, would be magnesium for sure, protein for sure, omega-3, probably vitamin D, yes. And magnesium and D, I would leaning towards 80% plus of the population deficient in both. Mm-hmm. And creatine, whether you're training every day or not, 5 grams of the stuff seems to be thumbs up all the way around.
Absolutely. Super advice. People that are listening, I would encourage you just take one of these areas, right? So we're trying to present, you know, the masterclass on all of these things, and you can go back and you can re-listen to it and think about what you want to do with this, but pick that one area, the thing that either will make the biggest difference or the thing that you think would be the easiest to consistently do in your life and start there. And you can always build on it later for sure. But I'm curious for yourself, but also just kind of a general as well. Are there specific, you know, whether it's a morning routine or evening routines or just routines in general that you have in your life that are very beneficial? And if so, what would those be, or what would you be recommendations around that?
Yeah, the one that I'm super loyal to is evening, actually, because of the importance of sleep. And when all of us go into train, we respect that there's some sort of a warm-up phase between arriving to train and starting to train, and sleep's the same. So we have fairly busy lives. There's a lot going on all day for most of us. We can't expect to just go hard and fast all day long and then, oh, it's whatever time, I'm going to just lie down and go to sleep. That transition period from all day to kind of winding down, it's been referred to as sleep hygiene, sleep routine. That's been a huge one for me for most of my life, actually, at least 15 years. Potentially more, is just making sure I wrap up work when possible. So when all the tasks are done for the day and I know going into the next day, I'm really clear on what those tasks are. Then I go, all right, I can put the computer away, get rid of the phone, say goodnight to whoever, make sure business is wrapped up. And then just kind of chill a little bit, have a good, doctor, I use Parsley's sleep remedy. So that plus some magnesium. So a little bit of a sleep cocktail. Me personally, I have a bath because I like getting real nice and hot and then coming out and doing a reasonable stretch, whatever I feel needs to be worked out. So it's about an hour of time between packing up work, making sure everything's chill and organized for the next day, and all the fires, if possible, are put out, taking about an hour time to have a bath or a hot shower, get warm, do some basic stretching. That could be when, once you learn the move 10 and 10 mobility poster, you'll remember those moves. They're very simple. Do that routine at that time. And then you'll find the nervous system has a chance to unwind so that when you go to sleep, you actually are kind of getting into bed and your head hits the pillow and you're out. Very effective. So I'm a huge fan of the sleep routine.
Love that. Super, super awesome. Tremendous amount of insight in this episode. Definitely one that people will have to go back and listen through and take more, you know, applicable things that they can do. So I'm curious, and I typically ask this as we kind of wrap up, but I'm curious for you, how would you go about defining success?
That's a good question. And I think that all of us that have kind of made the journey from sole practitioner into business owners and working with groups of people, success for me is knowing on all fronts that what we're building at Move and what I'm building with coaches at Move is going to be successful long. Like if I get hit by a bus next week, that everybody is going to be able to thrive and prosper and to keep everything going in my absence. So it's the piece of knowing that everyone is good enough at their job and the systems are well in place, that if something were to happen to me, that they're going to be okay. Mm-hmm. That's number one. And it's also, you know, we've all had days where I'm sure it's like, what am I doing? Like, this is crazy. 18 people had complaints. And it's success is having those days because of going through the hard times where it's peaceful. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy because the business is doing well and our clients and students are doing well and folks are happy. And it's the process of building a business that gets to the point where clients are happy, coaches are happy, and everyone's doing well. To me, that's success. Yeah. Because for me, it's a peaceful feeling where I know everybody's happy and I know there's hope and everyone's working towards shared goals. Because that's a win-win for the business. It's a win for the coaches. It's a win for the members. So to me, it's sort of that triangle of it's a win for everybody that's involved. That's success for me.
That's super good.
And out of that will come everything else. Out of that comes anything material that, you know, any of us would ever want. But for me, I'm not materialistic first. I want a strong, really stable and ever-growing business that serves a lot of people and is a platform of hope for people that are training, for people that are working. You know what I mean? That's success for me.
Yeah, that's a really sweet quote from Alain de Botton. I don't know if I'm saying his name right, but he's known as the practical philosopher. And basically he says success without peace is no success at all. And totally. I love how you talk about that. Like, you know, you can create something and on the outside, it might look like success, but if it doesn't feel like peace as an underlying thing, right? There's definitely times where it's all stressful and everything's crazy or whatever. But like that goal of going, can I create something like you talked about where it's just like, this feels peaceful. Like everybody is, you know, accomplishing their role. You know, we're moving forward. We're making the impact that we want to have. People are happy. People are fulfilled. So I really appreciate you bringing that up. So if people want to connect with the incredible work that you're doing, where can they go to do that?
Easy stuff. Just Instagram. My Instagram is Ashley R. Gass. And then our Instagram on Move is Training Calisthenics. Both easy to find. YouTube, same thing. Ashley Gass or Move Gymnastics Inspired Strength Training. If you just pull up anywhere on social media, my name or our Move Training, Gymnastics Inspired Strength Training in Clearwater, Florida, you'll find us. We're easy to find, getting easier to find.
Yeah. And I'll put the links to the show notes. And for people, Ashley is A-S-H-L-E-I-G-H. So it's spelled a little bit different and Gass is with two S's. So you can look that up, but yeah, I'll put the links in the show notes and send over that, you know, 10 for 10 or whatever you describe it as. And I'll put that in the show notes as well, because I think that would be a very good starting point for people. So thank you so much for your time. This is wonderful. And I know the audience will definitely get a lot of good things that they can implement out of it. So I really appreciate that.
I hope so. And I'll send you the link for the poster and everything else. And thank you for your time as well. And have a good night on your end of the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Before you go, I would love it if you actually just shared this episode with a friend. I'm sure while you were listening, someone just popped in their head and you're like, oh, they would probably like this as well. So it's really easy. You just click the share button on either the website or whatever podcast platform you're on and send it over to them. And chances are they'll probably like it too. Until next time, keep engineering your success.